show with Sarah and Christina. So, Sarah, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Christina. Yes, how are you?
I'm very well. Long time no speak.
It's been a long time no speak, and I can only apologise for our laziness, if I'm quite frank.
Do you want to know what we've got in our show today?
I can't wait. I've been waiting for this for days, and I'm on the edge of my seat.
On the all-new White Noise show, I've got a few little gems for you lined up, Sarah. As you well know, you love a challenge or a quiz, and I'm going to break you into the White Noise show slowly, and instead of doing a quiz, because I know you struggle with those, we're going to ease you in with a bit of a challenge.
And what's that for a challenge?
I believe you've got something to talk about that I'm unaware of at the
moment. I have a dilemma for you, some might call it.
Mm-hmm. And I know everybody has been missing my albinism news. But to start the show off, people call it different things. I'm not sure what you call it. Dancing eyes, wobbly eyes.
I think what you're referring to is nystagmus.
Nystagmus, that little understood condition. Would you like to explain for anybody out there that doesn't know what it is, what nystagmus is?
You never told me I had to explain nystagmus.
Well, in a nutshell, Sarah, what is it?
In a nutshell, it's the involuntary movement of the eye of neurological origin.
All right. Mm-hmm. The reason I want to talk about it, it comes off the back of an encounter I had a few days ago. I was going to my daughter's, I was meeting with her key worker at nursery and just have a chat up and catch up about how she's doing. A spontaneous meeting and they've got a tiny room. It's like kind of a broom cupboard. Pictures on the walls, nothing, very empty. Two chairs, I sat opposite her. We started talking and obviously like every sort of 5 seconds I'm kind of looking away, as you do. You're looking at the mm-hmm. person. I don't know if you do it, but I do.
I look at them.
Kind of look away. And what I was noticing was that she, every time I looked away, she looked where I was looking.
To see what you were looking at.
To see what I was looking at. And obviously, there was absolutely nothing in this room. You know, it was just an empty room with plain walls, nothing there. And I began to think, what is she thinking that I'm looking at? And gradually, she stopped doing it. But then I changed the success to sort of looking over to my right. Then gradually, I sort of looked down. First of all, she then looked down. Then I sort of looked over to the left a bit. She looked over to the left. And after about sort of 2 or 3 minutes of this, she kind of stopped thinking that there was something really exciting going on in this room. I have no idea.
Make someone really paranoid.
I know. I have no idea what she was thinking. I have no idea. And it just made me think, I have no idea. When I look in a mirror, I have no idea that my eyes are moving. And we've had a discussion before. I mean, I think if you're looking, it's noticeable, isn't it? But it's not like bonkers eyes that go all over the place.
No.
So I was thinking, what does she think of me? What do you think she thinks? Do you think she noticed?
I don't know, because sometimes I think it comes across as like almost social awkwardness. So it comes across that you don't want to make eye contact
with
somebody.
Like kind of shifty.
A bit shifty, you're a bit like suspicious, like... Obviously, she was suspicious about what's going on with your daughter at home. And I can imagine that would be, people must think, well, why do they keep looking? Are they, you know, are they really self-conscious? Are you a bit shy? Or they think there is something going on. There's like a fly in the room or something like that. Or
they're looking, like, this elusive fly that's not making a noise. It's just
like a mini person hiding in the corner that's waving at you every now and again or something. I don't know what people think. And that's sometimes where one of those situations where you go, right, okay, I either explain to somebody right now and go, do you know, it's because I have nystagmus and I can't look at you for long periods without starting to feel a bit dizzy.
But nobody would ever know what that was. And I would never in a million years say that. I would never tell anybody.
I just don't know, because sometimes I think, like, I would hate to feel that somebody had come away from a meeting with me, particularly somebody who I wanted to have a good opinion of me, like my child's nursery nurse, who I'd want to sort of to see me in a positive light and in a normal kind of light. I would hate for them to go away and think, ooh, what's going on there? Why are they doing that? Or like when you meet new people, when you meet new friends or whatever, I would absolutely hate it if I felt that somebody walked away thinking something funny with her, isn't there? So in many ways, I think I possibly would be more open about it, or would be very clear from the beginning that I was visually impaired. So you don't, I don't know, it's about necessarily saying I have nystagmus, that is why I don't focus in one place for any length of time. I think I would say, oh, I'm visually impaired. And I think suddenly that then answers a whole myriad of questions for people, because they're just like, oh, she's got kind of crazy eyes. All right. Didn't see very well. Fair enough.
Here's a question. Why can you not see it in the mirror? Do you know why you can't see it in the mirror? Because people have said if you record, if you take a video of your eye and you record it, then you can see it on video. So what's the difference between that and looking in a mirror? And because I wouldn't have a clue I'd got it, you know. No, that's not true. Like if I'm tired or something, but generally I wouldn't know. So I don't know why when you look in a mirror you can't see it.
Maybe it's because it's shifting with you. I don't know, maybe you can't kind of perceive that shift, whereas if you're looking at something on video, your eyes aren't moving at the same time as that video. They're potentially moving at a different time to that video, so therefore you can see it. Does that make sense? Like when you're sat in a car, and is it you rolling backwards or is it them going forwards? I don't know, that kind of
Anyone's got the answer, thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com, if anybody can answer me the question, why can I not see my eyes moving in a mirror, yet if I were to look in a video, on a video, I would be able to see them moving. Now Sarah, moving swiftly on to same topic,
right,
but just moving a little bit closer to that challenge of yours. So you know, I sort of always fancied myself as a bit of a doctor. I realized quite early on that it was never going to happen, you know. I do feel now that technology has moved on, and I think I could quite easily get a scalpel, cut somebody, you know, root around inside. No. They've got those big screens, don't care. Haven't they? No. Surgeons, no. Keyhole surgery as well, big screens.
To do with your eyesight.
I think we've got
a whole other set of issues there where you could not be a doctor. And the eyesight is really low on that list for me. Sorry. Anyway. Back to the challenge.
Yeah. So I was doing a little bit of reading about nystagmus, and I read from some ophthalmological journal.
I think that's just proved my point about you not being a doctor ever.
Ophthalmological? Is that not a word?
No, don't think so.
What's the word?
Ophthalmology journal, I think would probably be where we're at right. There.
Yeah. Some kind of ophthalmology journal about diagnosing nystagmus. And I read this. Nystagmus may appear daunting in examination. However, if you follow the steps outlined in the section on clinical techniques below, most cases can be diagnosed easily. So I thought,
you're going to diagnose me with nystagmus.
I think it might be a good idea.
Via a Skype conversation.
I think it might be a good idea to get my own clinical guidelines together for budding ophthalmologists so that they won't find the whole task as daunting as has been expressed above.
I find this quite interesting because I would say a diagnosis of nystagmus is quite straightforward. Are their eyes wobbling involuntarily?
Apparently not.
Yes or no?
Apparently not. Okay. So, Sarah, I think you're procrastinating because you realise
I'm obviously terrified that I might not have nystagmus after all.
That you might be just about to enter the 2015 Nystagmus Challenge.
Okay. Oh my God, I haven't even got a sweatband on. Let's go. Hit me.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Right, Sarah. So it's a three-pronged attack to diagnose, get rid of this daunting challenge, as the ophthalmologists seem to think it is. Okay. So your number one, first task of the challenge.
Yep.
Are you sitting on the sofa?
I am sitting on the sofa.
Stand up from the sofa.
Oh my God. Okay. Right, I'm up.
Right.
God, that was a lot of effort, wasn't it?
Ooh. Oh dear. Has she got nystagmus? Can she stand up? Are they related or is she just lazy? I think she's lazy.
Just a fact.
Right, so you need to move away from the sofa. Move away from the sofa.
Am I facing the sofa or not facing the sofa?
Doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Well, whatever you want. Right.
Okay, move away from the sofa.
What you have to do is you have to, after three, see how long you can stand on one leg for.
Oh my God.
Right?
That's horrific.
Are you ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
It's really wobbly. I'm literally wobbling all over the place. I've got arms and legs hanging out from either side.
Are you still on one leg?
I'm still on one leg, yeah.
This is good.
This is good. It's because I've got a core of steel. Burn them down.
So that was about 25 seconds.
That was awesome. That was pretty good.
So the next challenge is for you to open up your email that I sent you earlier on.
Okay. Can I sit back down again?
You can sit back down, yeah.
Okay, okay, good, because I already had. Yeah, I've opened up the email.
Open up your email.
Yeah.
Right, no zooming.
Okay, I'm not zooming.
No pinch and zoom.
I'm not pinched and zoomed.
Can you see two sets of numbers?
I can't read them. I'm guessing they're numbers. I can't. Yeah, they probably are numbers, but I can't read them.
All right. So what you're allowed to do if you can't actually... Sheesh, you're blinder than I thought. So what you want to be doing is turning your... So you want to be out... You want to pinch like a little tiny bit. So just so you can just about read the 12-point print one.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I pinched a bit so I can read 12-point.
Right, but you're not allowed to pinch any more for the one below.
Okay.
Right, series of numbers, Sarah. So yeah. I want you to see how far you can get along the 12-point print number line. Ready, set, go. Oh,
okay.
By the way, there is a rule here. You're not allowed to put your head at any weird angle. You have to be looking straight on at the screen.
Okay, that could be more challenging.
Head remains straight at all times. See how far down, then you've got to read the numbers out.
When you say my head has to stay straight, I can't even look with one eye closed. Okay, so my nose has to be directly pointing at them.
So you have to, yes.
I can read the zero.
Right, go.
Okay, zero. The next number's either an 8 or a 6, I don't know. The next two numbers I think are 9s, but I wouldn't bet my life on it. I think the one after that might be a 6, but maybe an 8. The next one is a 3, that's obvious.
Sarah, I think we can safely say you failed that part of this challenge.
Right,
quickly.
So the one... Can I turn my head now and do it, though?
No. The one below it is 10-point print.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
How far you can get with that one? Head
zero.
Straight on. Yeah.
0, 3. Probably a 6.
No, you
and then I can't
enough.
Get any further yet.
Absolutely failed.
Epic fail.
It's not going so well. And the final part of your challenge is...
Yeah.
Pick up your front door keys.
Okay.
Walk towards your front door. That's the sound effect of front door keys.
Yeah.
Walk towards your front door.
Okay, hang on, I've got to go out the other door now. I've got a few doors to go through yet in my mansion.
Your mansion.
My mansion with barn doors, if you can hear the latches. That the estate agent told me was a period feature in Victorian Terrace.
That's because you're from Gloucestershire, isn't it?
It's because I'm from Gloucestershire. Right, okay. I walked towards the front door.
Out the front door.
My keys. Yeah.
Get out the front door.
Get out the front door.
Out the front door.
Oh, I'm not standing on the street, dude. It's freezing and snowing.
It's not.
It is.
You're snowing.
It's snowing.
You need to. It's the challenge.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm out the front door. Jesus. If the neighbours see me.
Oh, they won't care. Right. Shut the door. Get out. Shut the door.
It's darn freezing out here.
Right. Now. Have you shut the door?
Yeah, I've shut the door. You heard it.
Right. Get your key.
Yeah, I've got my key.
Head straight on, facing the front door. Can you get your key in one go? No cheating. Ready, set, go. No, you can't. She can't do
go,
it.
Go. I've done it. I'm in.
Did you do it in one go?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Epic fail. Sarah, I think we can safely say you failed.
I've got
on
nice
all counts.
So where did you find this stupid clinical task? Because I think that's obviously proved a point, but made me look very silly to any neighbour that was
watching. It's a clinical task that I, as a budding medical woman, have cleverly designed these purposes. So if anybody wants to take part in my very clever nystagmus challenge to score any better than Sarah, let's recap. So she was on one leg for 25 seconds. She failed to read more than two numbers in a row and couldn't get into her own front door. You could email thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com. So, Sarah.
I feel thoroughly broken.
Do you feel wobbly?
Wobbly, yeah. I feel wobbly. My soul is destroyed. Okay. So, is it now time for my dilemma?
Let's move on to the dilemma.
Okay. So, Christina, I now plan for every time I meet with you in such a way over the White Noise Show to bring you a dilemma. And I would like you to help with that dilemma.
Okay.
Okay. And any of our listeners, if you would like to help with that dilemma, feel free to contact us, whitenoiseshow@gmail.com. Right. So recently I decided to apply for a new job. Now, I'm a physiotherapist and have been a physiotherapist for nearly 9 years now and feel quite confident in my abilities and I'm very, hopefully, very good at my job. However, being visually impaired does have an impact upon that job. So therefore, I do feel that employers, potential employers and current employers, need to be aware of my visual impairment and need to feel comfortable with my visual impairment. The question is, in the process of applying for a job, at what point do you disclose your visual impairment? Do you disclose it prior to applying for the job, so actually have a conversation about it before even putting the application in? Do you just put it on your application form and then forget about it? Do you put an application form in, but then on the side also let them know? Do you go for an informal visit and let them know? Do you wait till interview? Or do you actually wait till they offer you the job and go, oh, by the way, if you didn't notice the interview, I'm partially sighted. What do you do?
So I think it depends on your job. I think for you, you would probably be, I don't know if you're obliged to say anything. I don't know if you're obliged to say anything once they offer you the job. I don't know if you're then sort of slightly deceiving them if you don't say something. In a job like yours, I would say you probably would have to disclose it at an interview. And this is the bit that I really struggle with because I've so been brought up to not, you know, to let's pretend that there's nothing going on. And in some ways, you know, I think that's a good thing, but I'm never, you know, I'm not a scientific person, as proven on the nystagmus challenge. So I would never be in that kind of setting whereby it would be detrimental, if not dangerous, to not disclose that maybe your eyes don't work so well. Other jobs, I think it's actually entirely up to you. If you think it would benefit you to say something, then you should say it. If you think it wouldn't benefit you, then I think it's entirely up to you. It's your business to do with whatever you, in whatever way you want to. If you think that being visually impaired will, you know, at an interview people will think, oh, why is she, we were talking about my nystagmus, why is she not looking at me or you know, all the time, why is she shifty? I think it's such a personal thing. I've told people, I've not told people. But in terms of if you're doing a job whereby you're working with people, then I would, you know, in a clinical setting, then I would probably think you would disclose it probably before interview so that people don't get a shock when you arrive at an interview.
Yeah, see, that's what I went with. I disclosed, I did an informal visit to the hospital where I applied for the job. And on that informal visit, I then made my visual impairment known and had a discussion with my potential employer about my visual impairment and how that impacted upon my, potentially would impact upon my workplace if I got the job. And I came away from it and I felt that it was possibly the right thing to do. But I also came away and thought, in the brief time that she met me there and in the brief conversation that we had, have I raised more questions than I've answered? And have I put doubts in her mind rather than sort of reassuring them? And I always feel that, do we give ourselves a bit of a disadvantage kind of saying it in advance? I'm not sure about that. I kind of, as much as in my job, I would always disclose at some point, I would always have to disclose definitely. I also feel that sometimes if you give people kind of an opportunity to be prejudiced, and maybe that's me being really unfair and negative, I feel that they potentially would be prejudiced.
I think that you can give people ammunition for not giving you a job. And I think if you get a job, see, I spend so much time pretending that, you know, I don't have anything wrong with my eyes, that I always feel like it's that it's game, set, match. If I were to get a job and people weren't to know about it, that would be the ultimate in personal satisfaction, thinking, ha, they've no idea, I know this and they don't know it. Because I think if it doesn't impact on the way that you do your job, then it shouldn't really matter, and you know it's your business to do with whatever you will. If you think that, say, your body language, or, you know, you might trip up at an interview, not literally, well,
you never know.
You that might trip really up at an interview or something if you have excellent. To, you know, I don't know.
But don't you almost feel it's more game, set and match if you get a job and they know? Do you know what I mean? If you get the job and they know you have a disability, so potentially have more baggage than somebody else they might employ in various ways, and then they still give you the job.
I think it depends how warped your mind is. My warped mind is like, if I can get away with it, hallelujah, bring it on. And
I think this all raises really interesting points, though, doesn't it, about whether or not you perceive being really kind of upfront about your visual impairment, not in a cringy way, not in a constantly shoving it in people's faces, not in a, I don't know, wearing an Illuminous Sam Brown everywhere and kind of big dark box glasses and, you know, really kind of blatant.
Not, sorry, not you've in just that... utterly devalued my whole wardrobe.
Is that what you wear all
what's,
the time?
What's obviously. Wrong with that? What's wrong with a Sam Brown?
Oh, no, it's great. No, you should so go with that. That is so awesome. That is so awesome. Yeah, but if you're kind of, I'm not on about that kind of way of it, but if you're kind of, I don't know, it's an interesting comparison, isn't it, between being kind of right on with it and being kind of like, yeah, I'm visually impaired, and kind of I'm what, versus kind of faking it all the time. And I don't know what's kind of better or not, but it's a really interesting comparison, isn't it?
I think probably the happy medium, the more healthy medium, would be, I'm kind of cool with it and I'll drop it in
as and when,
and in a week, you know, I say all this, but, you know, I am actually quite kind of cool with it, but I still always work on a needs to know basis, and if people don't need to know, then I ain't gonna tell them, because I think people make assumptions, and I'd rather they didn't. I mean, quite obviously they can tell that I've got albinism, but people don't even necessarily, as we all know, they don't necessarily know that you've got dodgy eyes, do they? I mean, they might think, oh, you've got weird eyes, but they don't know to what degree they're weird. And then you tell people that you don't see so well, and actually they'll never grasp the concept of it.
No,
and I think that people never actually really realise how rubbish my vision is.
I would 100% agree with that too. I would 100%, even when I go for jobs and I kind of express my visual impairments to people and everything like that, people have no idea. No. People have no idea at all. And I think that's, I think to grasp the idea of how low our vision is, but how well we function, is impossible for people. I just don't think it doesn't, the two do not compute.
The only way I don't like, if I then don't disclose something, is the whole classic, I'll walk past somebody and totally ignore them. And that's the bit that I can't, that's the bit that I really hate, because I'm a confident, happy-go-lucky person. I'll talk to anybody. And I've said before, there's two things about being visually impaired that I hate. There are two things that I would change. They are not being able to drive. That sucks such a big-time amount. Public transport, and ignoring people. I can't bear the thought of ignoring people when they don't know, which is a good reason to disclose that you know your eyes are a bit dodgy. But equally, sometimes it's not appropriate. And if, you know, if you're having a random conversation with a random person, you know, on a dog walk or something, you're like, oh, by the way, and you walk past them. I don't know, I've probably walked past the same person five times. I've talked to them five times. I've actually walked straight past them, and they probably think, what the heck?
You're a bit split personality there. Yeah,
yeah, some kind, yeah, of issue.
And I think I can't bear the idea of someone thinking that. So I think that's probably why I do end up being quite upfront a lot of the time. And like I said, I don't particularly go into any depth about it at all. I'd just say, oh yeah, visually impaired, so if I walk past you, really sorry, not being rude. And I think I'm quite upfront about that now, because like you, that is one of my absolute worst things about being visually impaired, is that sometimes we look very rude, and that for me is just not good,
especially in a work situation when you know, you can walk past your colleagues and
absolutely
look like you're snubbing them, and actually you're not.
Or even kind of moving to a new area and you know, you're kind of constantly meeting new people kind of on your street, or kind of any new situation where you're meeting a high volume of new people, and you want to make a good impression, and you want to fit in, and you want to have people feel positive things about you. Then I think it can be really hard. And sometimes I think it is really helpful just to be like, but like I said, in a really kind of just drop it in conversation and carry on kind of way. No big deal sort of thing.
No big deal.
No big deal.
Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
This is the bit that I think everybody has been waiting for the last 3 years.
Well, it's true, because it's, you know, most people have been completely bereft of albinism news.
People,
you know,
people have not known what's been going on in the albinism news world.
Because we are the only people that bring it together and report it.
Nobody else does. And, you know, let me just say, if you don't take this seriously, I get all my news from Reuters. This is proper news. This isn't made up namby-pamby news. This is proper news. So for the first time for 3 years...
Oh my goodness, I knew that noise was going to come back. That actually, you're giving me a migraine. Stop.
News.
Stop the noise. Noise, stop. Finish. Done. Over.
Right. There's been an albino dolphin sighting. An incredibly rare dolphin was filmed near the Florida coast hunting in for its dinner. The albino bottlenose, thought to be an adolescent, was seen poking his dorsal fin above the water several times in the Indian River Lagoon by the east coast of the state. A few seconds later, it exposes more of its body and briefly crests the surface
with its nose
before swimming away with its regular coloured grey bottlenosed other dolphins.
Do you think they get really badly sunburnt?
Well, they're under the water a lot of the time, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're sort of,
they're
quite close to the top a lot of the time, aren't they, dolphins?
Well, I've watched the Octonauts. Have you not watched the Octonauts about the albino dolphin?
No.
No, well, if you watch the Octonauts about the albino dolphin, you'll know that it gets sunburnt. So, my next story.
Okay.
It'll be all white.
No.
An extremely rare albino bear spotted teaching her cub how to catch a fish. The bears are so rare, it is believed that this is the third time a white mother bear and her cub has ever been sighted together.
Aww.
Mr. Breckenbridge, 43, travelled to the huge rainforest in Canada to sight this very rare bear.
Do you know, I can't help feeling like if there is a mother and child bear, you know, mother bear and baby bear, as it were, is there a little bit of, going on there?
Well, it was a very peaceful and spiritual experience.
This
was my third trip, and I have never seen a white bear before.
He should go to kind of the North Pole, because there's a lot of white bears there.
Yeah, they're called polar bears, aren't they, Sarah?
That's those ones, white ones.
Right, well, this story, my final piece of news, albino deer made headlines worldwide. A young hunter bagging a 12-point albino buck in Osceola Township in October became an internet sensation. Everyone is calling Everyone is calling all of the hunting shows and hunting magazines about this shot, apparently.
I have to say, I'm sure seeing an albino deer is quite rare, but actually shooting one isn't that hard, surely.
Well, exactly, and especially if it's done by a 12-year-old, but apparently they were receiving death threats and such like, because people were describing it as a beautiful animal, much like a unicorn.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty anti-hunting, so actually I'm with them on that.
Yeah, but should an albino deer be favored above all other deers?
Yeah,
apparently there is no biological reason to protect these animals. It's been law since 2008 that they are also allowed to be shot. Prior to that, they were a protected animal.
Oh, so they're now allowed to be shot?
They're now allowed to be shot, yeah. Well, it's probably because there's a huge rising population of albino deers.
All the rest are being shot. So all the rest are being... All these albino deers breeding.
And they've been taking over.
It's just more and more of them. I kind of like the idea of that.
I like the idea of them being some kind of magical, mystical unicorn.
Yeah. People often think of me like that.
People often think of me like that as well. Right, on that happy note, I think we shall disappear. So if you want to get in touch with us, it's thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com. If you want to take part in my nystagmus challenge, get in touch, thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com. So see you later. Bye.